Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the Solaire Report a man who needs no introduction, Franklin Sanders of the Money Changer. We're going to be talking about what happened with precious metals last year, how it's done this year, the outlook for precious metals. You sent a lot of questions about storage options, so we want to touch base on that. But when you talk about gold and silver, you can't help but talk about financial freedom. And there's so many wild things going on. We're going to take some time to talk about some of what's sort of happening in the politics of our situation as it relates to the financial system. So, Franklin, welcome back to the Solaire Report.
Well, I'm just delighted to be here.
I'm very
happy to be here.
Tell us about 2015. How did precious metals fare?
2015. Precious metals didn't fare well. Gold was down 10.4%. Silver was down 11.5%. Platinum was down over 26%, and palladium almost 30%. So it was a whacking bad year. But it wasn't a good year for stocks either. The Dow transports were down nearly 18%. The Dow industrials down 2.2%. The S&P 500 down 0.7%, which I guess is basically flat. Other world indices down. It's been, you know, I think this was the year of transition. You saw that transition, especially in the bank stocks index, where the two big to fail, which is composed mostly of the two big to fail banks. And when that begins to go down, it's called the Philadelphia Bank Stock Index. When that begins to drop, it means that confidence in the financial system is dropping. And we look for that. I look at the gold, at the spread, that is the gold divided by the bank stock index, to see which one is gaining on the other one. Because that's really probably the most pivotal indicator other than the Dow and gold that I watch. And the reason is very simple, because it will tell you when money is going into the financial system and out of metals. And when that flow is reversed, and I think that what we've seen says that that flow has been reversed. So anyway, it was oil, of course. Let me go on with the 2015. Oil, of course, lost 31% and has gone on losing. It has lost another nearly 20% since the year started. U.S. Treasuries kind of didn't do anything much. The yield changed a little bit, but not very much. So overall, it was a very difficult year for most people to make money, even though I know that there was excitement about the FANG stocks and all that sort of thing. But now they're busy giving all of that back. Since the first of the year, it has been stocks have been under heavy attack, and even with the gains of the last few days, last night when they closed, the Dow for the year was down 7.1%, and the S&P was down 7.3%. Gold and silver, on the other hand, have done amazingly well. And we'll get to that in a minute. The gold for the year is up 13%. Silver for the year is up 11.3%. Platinum and palladium, which had been sort of dragging down the whole metals complex, are doing well. They have made what look to be bottoms too. Although palladium's still sort of working at it. The dollar index is what is interesting.
Franklin?
Yeah.
Let me just ask you a question, because in January last year, silver was up 16%, gold up 10%. Mm-hmm. It almost looks to me like a repeat of early 2015. Does it look the same to you, or is it different?
Well, yeah, but I don't think you had the same, quite the same weakness in the, you didn't have the same weakness in the stocks, and you didn't have the same setup in the, in other indicators that you got this year. And those other indicators have been building since the summer. For example, the Dow in gold, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, that's changed. The dollar, also you've had since December what appears to be a significant break in the dollar, although that's not been finally determined yet. But that's taken it down 2% for the year, and that's counting a pretty big rise yesterday. So when I look at all that stuff together, I think that what you've seen, what you saw in 2015 was a big shift, was money shifting out of paper assets and into hard assets. Now, let me qualify that. There is a price deflation going on in commodities that is the natural result of all of the monetary inflation that central banks engaged in the 20 years from 1995 to 2015. That will probably be worked out this year. I mean, I can only envision, now anything can happen, but what I envision happening is that the rapid collapse of stocks will induce central banks to print even more money and create even more money, including the Fed. And if they do that, then it won't take long for commodities to bottom and turn around and go up again when they becomes evident that the dollar and all the rest of those currencies are being depreciated. So that, you know, what I look for, what I think happened is that you got that shift out of financial into hard assets last year, and now you're seeing the culmination of the drop in commodity prices that began in 2008 with the financial crisis. And of course, oil has shown that the most severely.
So let me bring up a couple of things that relate to this.
Okay.
And I'm going to walk away from the charts and just look at the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that there was an enormous, you know, you have the general investment community saying, okay, we engaged in unprecedented QE, and did it really work, or did it just delay the inevitable? Big question mark.
Right.
And then you had a series of things happen in the fourth quarter that so devastated any confidence, I believe, in U.S. leadership, you know, that I think the world is looking around and saying, you know, I think it induced a lot of distrust of the system, and that's part of what we're seeing. You know, the new year starts, everybody says, let's get our money out.
Right. Which events in particular are you thinking about? I mean, there are a lot of them, but...
I'll just use one example. When Donald Trump basically said, you know, no Muslims allowed in the country, what he did was he said to 24% of the people around the world, we don't want your money. And you know, it's, first of all, what he was proposing was way outside of the Constitution as far as I'm concerned. But second of all, was so over the top in terms of the financial reality, because you're basically picking a fight with a tremendous amount of the capital that you're looking to flow into the market. You know, there's a very deep personality disorder there. And, you know, and I think there's a real, and it comes on top of, you know, the United States engaging in very ugly economic warfare and warfare all over the world. And I think it signaled a message that this country is very financially fragile and weak, and the general population is so far away from the reality. You know, the politics, the official reality and the reality have become so disassociated that you literally can't trust the U.S. leadership to manage the financial system.
Well, I'm not trying to be smart aleck, but my first response is, so what else is new? I mean,
right.
You know, they've always been that way. They may have hidden behind a facade of reliability and respectability before, but the U.S. has always been that way. And one of the most dangerous things any country could do was to be a friend of the U.S. And that's been
right.
true since the Shah of Iran. But, and they go out, and you're right, they go out of their way to insult and to insult people and to pick fights. And the worst, to me, my mind immediately went to this stupidity that they're playing out in both the Ukraine and Syria.
Right.
World war is not a toy to be played with. It's
right.
not an option. And
right.
the Obama administration is pushing the Russians, poking them in the eye. That just seems to me to be, well, it's like giving teenagers a case of whiskey and car keys, you know.
Right. Well, they're doing it, and it's not effective. In other words, if you look at the sanctions, we've managed to tank the, you know, or induce tremendous amounts of global slowdown and debase a lot of the economics of many different countries for what, you know, what has it accomplished?
Nothing. It doesn't accomplish anything. That just did. I mean, they went and picked on Russia in her own sphere of influence by taking Ukraine into the Western alliance, and now they, you know, after the Russians have been promised that they wouldn't do that, so
right.
it's not any surprise that the Russians are not pleased about that.
Right. So I just think you're watching a very fundamental breakdown in confidence in the leadership that it's very hard to capture when you look at charts, but you have a general deflation. And I see it all around the world is, you know, businesses and people saying, you know, I'm just going to pull my horns in. There's no point in taking risk in this environment.
Right.
So I think the deflation, you know, part of the collapse of liquidity comes from a fundamental distrust of the system. If you're being
right,
harvested in a rigged system, you don't want to play. You take your cards and go home.
Right. But see, that revulsion from the system is part of the whole psychological, the whole bundle of elements in the psychology or morale of a market. And when a market
right.
is upbeat, when the market has an optimistic, upbeat outlook, a bullish outlook, then you can hit it over the head with a hammer and it won't slow down.
Right.
But now all of these other things are building up and creating concern and worry and making people pull out of the markets and pull their horns in, so to speak. So yeah, I think that's, you know, it's logical that that outlook and that breach in morale, break in morale, comes with a break in the stocks. And I think that's what you're, you know, I hadn't really thought about it the way you expressed it, but I think that's part of, yeah, I think that's part of what's going on.
So I'll tell you what my big concern on every asset class, it's not just precious metals, it's every asset class, is if you look at the charts, particularly on the U.S. dollar, which is the one I watch the closest,
mm-hmm.
I still think we're in danger of a big leg up. And what's interesting is last year, every time it's hit 100, and I think it peaked through 100 this year as well, every time it does, you know, the corporations just go crazy because it slams them on exports and on consolidating earnings back. So there's a lot of politics to try and prevent a dollar from going too high, at least there are here. But my concern is if you look at how much dollar denominated debt we've issued globally, it's very, very significant. And a lot of those countries or companies are dealing with falling revenues from the commodities, deflation. At the same time, there's a potential for the cost of the dollar, you know, the capital to go up and liquidity is shrinking. And so they're very much in a trap that's supporting the dollar in the short and intermediate term. So
right.
We certainly know the market share of the dollar is falling long term.
Right. Turn that back around, though.
Right.
If it's true, and it is, that a rising dollar hurts U.S. manufacturers, it's true at the same time that a rising dollar helps banks in a world where liquidity is shrinking and they want to attract global capital. So
right.
You can look, if you look at a strong dollar policy, which is undoubtedly what the Fed is pursuing, because currency exchange rates are not freely determined. They're determined in consultation with other central banks. So you have to assume the Fed is doing it on purpose. Why would the Fed be doing that? And one of the answers is because it attracts capital to the United States, and the big banks need that capital.
Right.
So.
Right, but they need a positive arbitrage. And I'll tell you, the guys who really need the positive arbitrage are the pension funds and insurance companies, because the banks have made a ton of money, and the insurance companies and the pension funds have been dealing with lower and lower yields, which is really biting. And I think it's one of the reasons the Fed wanted to raise, and that's why what's happening with negative interest rates is so interesting. And maybe you could describe that and what it means for precious metals.
Well, it means everything for precious metals. What it does is destroy the one big objection to owning precious metals. The one big objection to owning precious metals is, oh, they don't pay any interest. So if I put my money in precious metals, I don't get that 1.5% I might have gotten by holding something else. Well, it's very hard to get 1.5%. Now, if they take interest rates negative, then suddenly you have to pay to own government bonds. Or pay to own bank deposits, whereas you can hold gold and pay no interest, pay, you know, not be out any money. Plus, you have the possibility that the gold may go up after a 4.5-year down cycle. So all it does is make gold look incredibly attractive.
Right.
Basically, it makes holding gold costless. And thank you very much, Federal Reserve.
Well, actually, it's not the first. It was the Europeans who started to do the negative interest rates. And the way it works, there are two ways of looking at negative interest rates. The first is the market, because if you look at size, the one who's really going to negative interest rates, or was last week, I haven't looked at the yield curve this week, was the market. You had the Swiss sovereign bonds negative out to beyond 10 years.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary. It's not just in the short end. So basically, now some of that's a currency play on the Swiss franc. So institutional investors are probably figuring they're going to get their money back on the currency. But it's, you had 10 sovereign bonds from Switzerland to Japan in negative zone, and that's the market. It's not the central banks. So,
right.
And
well,
that's what was so scary about it, because you're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars trading at a negative interest rate, and that's no small potato.
Right, and one of the things that you always have to remember is that if you've got $100 million, you can't buy gold. You're almost limited to government securities. If you're
right.
If you're trading in blocks of money that great,
right.
You're almost limited to government securities because nothing else has the liquidity and the size of market that they have.
Right.
So, the negative interest rates are going to cause a big problem for economies, but they're also going to help gold and silver. Back to that raising interest rates, banks are, the Fed is, according to a friend of mine who used to work for the Fed many years, The Fed has been captured by the big banks, and what it does, it does for the sake of the big bags. Now, I know this is no great revelation.
Surprise.
To you, but, I mean, I don't mean like I'm letting you in on the secret of the universe, but a lot of people don't understand this. And so when the Fed pursues, when they weaken the dollar and raise interest rates, when they strengthen the dollar and raise interest rates, they're working on behalf of the banks. Have you ever heard a bank complain about higher interest rates? Of course not, because it makes it easier for them to widen their spread.
Right.
So,
and that's why the other negative interest rates I was just going to say was when the banks post reserves, which they have been posting enormous amounts, does the Fed give them an interest rate on those reserves or do they charge a negative interest rate? And that's when people talk about the Fed doing negative interest rates, it's on those accounts. So they're
right, but there's no
negative in the market and then on the Fed funds.
Well, there's no, I wouldn't put it past them to figure out some way to keep paying interest on those reserves.
I'm sure they are.
Interest rates are negative. You know, they're,
right.
In any event, but you and I have left out the major problem with first of all, persistently low interest rates, that is suppressing interest rates to a zero interest rate policy, and negative interest rates, and that is the incalculable harm that it does the economy. It makes it literally impossible for entrepreneurs to rely on the price of money and to know by that price of money what people want in the future. In other words, it jimmies the single most important price in a capitalist system. So,
well, and remember something else. They've made it almost impossible to circulate equity at a local or entrepreneurial level. So
Yes. You've
got an enormous regulatory structure. Now, I always say I can walk down to the Hickory Valley grocery store and spend my life savings on lottery tickets. I can, within a very short order, spend my life savings on illegal narcotics in my county, but I cannot put money in stock in my neighbor's business without him or me possibly going to jail.
There you go.
So, yeah, on the theory that I'm being protected.
Right. Well, so, you're too dumb to know what's good for you.
Well, you've shut off. You've made it impossible for small business to get transparency around how government money, or almost impossible to get transparency on taxpayer and government money. You've made it impossible to circulate equity locally. You know, you've done everything, and now with Common Core and Obamacare, you're literally trying to digitize and centralize healthcare and education, which are two parts of the local economy that are still generating GNP locally. So you're trying to centralize and control everything, and the more you centralize, the more, you know, it's like a body. If you send all the blood to the toes and the fingers and you don't let it come back to the heart and the brains, what do you think is going to happen? And so the theory is, well, let's steal more blood and bring it more. You know, they keep taking more and more, and that's shrinking the pie, and the more they shrink the pie, then the more money they need. So when you have a negative return on investment economy, it's always going to keep shrinking, and it's a downward game, and that's why the real solutions are to turn it around. So if you flip a negative return to a positive return, but the problem with that is then you're going to have an economy where winners, you know, are winners and losers are losers, and things aren't rigged for, you know, a small select group of people, and capital isn't controlled and centralized. I mean, we have a Soviet economy. And, you know, and it's backed up with enormous amounts of legal, financial, and physical force, not to mention that, you know, in my polls in the last 2 days, a majority of the people I polled think the Supreme Court justice was just assassinated.
Well, who wouldn't think that? I mean, that's the way we operate now. I mean, this has come out in so many different instances over the last 40, 50 years, you know. Who wouldn't think that? So,
well, how do you have an economy where no player, you know, if you have players who can kill with impunity and do, then how do you have an economy?
You don't. I mean, you don't. What you've got is a Potemkin village. You've got a charade, and that's what we've got is the charade. And I mean, I understand that. Maybe most people don't, but it's a charade. Do you think you can, there's too many times I can tell you that I've looked at markets and I've said, oh my gosh, look at that. There's a, look at a chart and there's a sign that is absolutely unequivocal. Change of direction, down or up, doesn't matter either way. And then all of a sudden, it completely reverses itself. And right. This sign that is normally unchallengeable reverses itself. And the whole right. market goes against what it did. Well, look, that doesn't happen in nature. I'm sorry. It just doesn't happen in nature. In nature, things change and they, you know, they follow through. And this is not just a complaint of someone who's incompetent to do the job. I'm not the only one that looks at it and sees that. It's just ridiculous. So it's a farce, but you still have to try to protect yourself as much
Absolutely.
As you can.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you can't lie down in the road and say, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to lie here and die. you gotta get up and keep going.
Well, you know, my favorite line, and I use it a lot on the Solaria Report, but I'm going to use it again. I always quote you with one saying, what I try and impress upon people is the day after the collapse, somebody's going to wake up wanting breakfast and somebody's going to make money cooking it for them.
Well, that's exactly right. And they, you know, their whole object, and what a lot of people don't understand, and you do, and you certainly help me get a grasp on this, is they don't want to collapse.
Yeah,
the people who run the world don't want to collapse because that carries with it too great a threat of dislocation for them. You know, if you throw all the balls of power up in the air, who in the world knows where they'll come down? So they don't want that. They want stability more than anything else.
Let me bring up one other topic because I have been surprised at the depth of the fall on oil. And if you look at a lot of the players in the commodities world, you know, the people who normally operate on very significant amounts of insider trading,
yeah.
and insider information are also being surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think I've never known when the line would move on technology, but we are having an unending number of announcements. So on nuclear fusion from the Germans, from the Chinese, from Northrop Grumman, from Lockheed Martin, about their success with nuclear fusion, which is a much cleaner, safer, you know, form of nuclear technology. We're watching incredible developments in the solar area and projections that solar, you know, Boeing just ran an ad at the Super Bowl. I don't know if you saw it, basically showing the world in 2116 and all of our power being delivered from the orbital platform and solar platforms. So, you know, and you have to, I don't know if you've seen it, but Dennis Gartman out running around saying, you know, that oil is going to go the way of whale oil. And so, you know, and clearly we know fracking technology has dramatically shifted supply and will probably continue to for some time as that technology goes around the world. So I think part of this that I have trouble getting my mind around is what technology is doing to help contribute to deflation. Now, for many people, you know, much lower oil price is good. It's good for manufacturing. It's good for the consumer. I think if it wasn't for a strong dollar and a much lower gas price, imagine what the U.S. consumer would be feeling right now.
Well, that's true. Yeah. So it has certain benefits. That's true.
Right. Well, we're in a position where technology can be very, very deflationary. And my biggest concern about rotten leadership is if you look at what it's going to do to employment over the next 10 years, any projections, It's quite extraordinary. You know, I live across the street from Hickory Valley Cotton Gin, and when I first got here, you know, during season, the guy who runs it, who's also our mayor, a great guy, you know, would have, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50 people working there. He's got the whole thing machined, and I'm not talking about anything, you know, fancy like robotics. He's just got all new machinery, and he's doing it with two or three guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, it's quite amazing the, you know, the changes that have happened but are also coming. And I think the question is, if I just read one projection that said 50% of the jobs will be replaced, you know, by various technological developments over the next 10 years, well, we're all going to have to reinvent ourselves, which is not a problem if entrepreneurial capital and activity is free to, you know, if the entrepreneurial markets are liquid and open, I don't think that's a problem. But if they're, you know, if you have this kind of control, how's that supposed to work?
Well, here's the thing about it is that if you didn't have control, if the markets weren't regulated and controlled, then what normally happens with technology is that it creates so many new jobs,
right,
over a period of time where the market can more or less digest the change. You know, you can think of any number of technological advances that have created more jobs than they've taken away over time.
Right.
But if capital can't flow freely from one area to another, that doesn't happen. And if you're not free to develop those new technology, which you're not in the United States, then it creates big problems. Yeah.
Right. And so the solutions are all about freeing things up and letting markets work. And what we're watching is more and more control from the people who brought us the last problem. So it's going in the wrong direction. Well, we've gotten a lot of questions about storage options. Can we turn to that?
Sure. Yeah.
I didn't know if we put up the charts on the website. I didn't know if there was more in the charts you wanted to point out.
Yeah. Can I point out just a couple of things?
Please.
The bank stocks index is one of the things that I'd like to point out. The gold bank stock index spread. I mentioned that earlier, and I really could hardly overestimate how important that is. It's broken out of a range that has ruled for over two and a half years, and it's broken out big time to the upside. So that
represents. Oh, I think you're underestimating. I would call that a moonshot.
Well, it is. I mean, it's huge, and
yeah.
And so, your listeners need to keep an eye on that. That's because as long as we've got that going for us, we can buy gold confidently, because
right,
that represents that money shifting out. The same thing is true of the Dow and gold. And if you look at that long-term chart of the Dow and gold, you see that it turned down in 1999 from about a 44 high and went as low as 571, 5.7 ounces of gold to buy the whole Dow in 2011. Well, since then, it's been in reaction mode, but this year, it has broken down through the uptrend line from that 2011 low, and I mean, it's broken down big time. So, and the Dow and silver's done the same thing. Again, that represents that shift of money out of financial assets and into gold and silver. So, that's one of the indicators that I watch more closely than anything else, because
that's a very good thing to watch.
Yeah, if that's against gold, and when it's rising, it's going against gold. If that's against gold, we've got a problem. And when both the Dow in gold and the Dow in silver are dropping, then we know where the trends are. That lost, the Dow in gold lost about 85% of its value from 99 to 2011. It will probably go down to 2 or 1 ounces before this is all over. So it'll lose another 85% of its value between now and market peaks.
So let me ask you, Frank, let's say I have plenty of, you know, I've got my core position in gold. So I've got my stash and I'm confident of that, but I'm interested in, you know, as an investment in buying more, but I'm worried about getting head faked out by another round of printing. So the question, of course, is I can go in now or I can wait and go in later. But let's say I want to go in now. Is there any way I can protect myself if I do take an investment position, if we get another round of quantitative easing and the same thing happens last year? Because, you know, gold and silver, I really thought there was a good chance we had bottomed and it had turned last January, February, and then, of course, head fake out. So, and things are, you know, down significantly for the year. So how do you protect yourself if you want to try and go back in on your investment positions?
Well, the easiest way to do that would be to buy the gold and hold the gold. And then if you see a big jump unfolding in stocks, just to buy, you know, leveraged stock ETFs is what I would do, or options, call options, to try and take advantage of it. It's going to take some pretty sophisticated action if you're trying to hedge that kind of risk. And by sophisticated action, I mean you're going to have to figure out which are the triple leveraged stock ETFs that I can buy. And I will make up enough money on that and then some to account for whatever I might lose on my precious metals holding. So that, I mean, that's the only way I know to do it. You can always buy put options on your precious metals, metals. In other words, you can buy gold put options. But you have to be nimble to do those things, Catherine. You have to have a very good idea of which way the market is going. And by very good, I mean you have to be very correct in your outlook.
Well, that's why what I do personally is I'm balanced and I ignore it.
Well, I think for most people that's the best answer. You know, for most, and that's why for most people the thing to do is to align yourself with the long-term trend that's going to last 15 or 20 years and not worry too much about the fluctuation.
Right.
But
right.
Let me go back to what you said, you know, why is this not a repeat of last year? If you look at the shortest term gold chart that I sent you, and that's probably called the short term gold chart, something happened there on that chart back 3 days ago that has not happened before. And that is that you had this big bowl bottom in gold, and it broke up and went straight up out of there, and then broke through 1200 and went to 1263. Well, as a first step, you couldn't ask for one better than that. In addition to that, you had this gigantic burst of volume on that day, which confirms that rise. So then it's come back since then, but that's normal behavior. You know, you get a touchback to the breakout point. So as long as gold doesn't go below 1190, you're okay. I wouldn't start worrying until gold went below 1190, which was the low yesterday. But it's staying up here over 1200.
Right.
It's just classic breakout activity, and it's confirmed by all these other indicators that I've mentioned. And that's the reason why I think this is the real thing. Of course, everything always has to be confirmed, though.
Whatever the bond market is, the bubble's over. You know, we've had a long-term bull on the bonds. It's over. I'm not saying they can't flatline it and keep it up for years, but it's over. And
well, the market's doing that.
Right. And so the question is, where is all that money going to go? And the reality is the bond market is huge. It's much bigger than the equity markets, which have grown a lot over the last 20, 30 years, because, you know, Eastern Europe and Asia are now moving into equities. And so you've got a whole part of the world that's coming in, and that's going to keep happening. And precious metals compared to, you know, is smaller still. So, you know, it is not surprising that the number one and number two guy at the largest bond fund in the world, you know, the top guy had a nervous breakdown in public and the number two guy left and is now writing books, you know, but when you're sitting on the top of the largest bond fund in the world and liquidity is leaving the market, what do you do? So that money's got to go someplace, and that's the $64,000 question. Where's that money going to go? And what the last 3 weeks proves to me is it doesn't take but a little of it to really shoot gold and silver up.
Well, oh, gosh, because there's such tiny markets in comparison to the bonds or stocks, either one. But and this is – you just have come around to a point I was really itching to make. And that point is this: people don't realize how small and what a low door it is into the precious metals. They think they're so used to going out. These are not created by pushing electrons around. Somebody has to dig stuff out of the ground. Somebody has to move it around on pallets. Somebody has to drive the forklift. There's a very small door into gold and silver. And because markets are crooked and manipulated, let me give you just a kind of theoretical idea of what I'm talking about. Suppose if you look at the supply chain for silver, for manufactured silver products, like 100-ounce bullion bars, 1-ounce rounds, 10-ounce bars, 1,000-ounce bars even, that supply chain all leads back to the COMEX. Well, suppose the COMEX wakes up one day and says, oh, well, we don't have any silver. We don't have enough silver to deliver, so you have the option of cash settlement or physical settlement, as long as the physical lasts. Well, what about this refinery out here that's stamping out 100-ounce bars and 1-ounce rounds, and suddenly they find out they can't get the 1,000-ounce bars they need? What happens to them? Well, further, what happens to their customers whom they promised that stuff to? What happens to me down the line, the dealer who's promised that to my customers? And don't tell me this doesn't happen, because I've been in this situation already two times since 2008. Because in 2008, the market dried up so bad that you could not get silver for 8 to 10 weeks. And people were glad to wait on it. And that was paying a 50% premium over the paper price. Gold premiums also went up, and the delivery time, not as much, but they also went up, and the delivery times went out. So what I'm saying is, when you think about that, then it makes the price risk of gold and silver less important, remarkably less important, because they are, after all, the ultimate cash. I mean, you know, we talk about them as investments and all that, and that's true, but they're the ultimate cash. That's the reason we have them. I mean, it's like having a 45. What good is it for me to have a 45 here in West Point if my ammunition is up in Nashville? It doesn't, you know, it doesn't. The whole thing has to be there when you need it, And so that puts another aspect. I'm not trying to be an alarmist, but I am just telling you, this is the reality of what we deal with. Back in the summer, we had a period of about 4 months when we were on 8 to 12 week delay on silver products. And don't even talk about 90% silver coin. The premium on that stuff went up to $5 an ounce. So anyway, all of these things go together to make my outlook one that doesn't place quite so much importance on the price. You ask about storage. Let me make two remarks first, okay? A lot of people have IRAs or self-directed IRAs, And the biggest complaint that we hear about that is, well, I can't hold the metals myself. Well, that's absolutely right. If you've got an IRA, it's a deal with it. You know, it's a contract with the government, and the government sets the rules, and they say you can't hold it. There is a way around that, and there's a website called survival401k.com. In 2002, Congress set up a 401k program for self-employed people. So if you have as little as $100 of self-employed income a year, you can set up a 401k. It can only have two participants, you and your wife. And you can put in up to $53,000 each. And here's the secret. You are the trustee. You hold the stuff. So for some people, that might offer a tax-deferred option about as good as an IRA, except that you can hold it as well. Now, having said all that, if we want to store it somewhere, if we want to store our gold and silver somewhere, there are several different options I can offer. And one of the reasons we might store, and generally I'm against storage, and I'm in favor of taking personal possession just for the reasons I laid out earlier. If we're going to trade the gold-silver ratio, which I highly recommend that people do as a way to increase the number of ounces they hold, 1,000-ounce bars are the best way to do that, 1,000-ounce silver bars. Well, I can't get I can't take 1,000-ounce bars out of an exchange-approved warehouse, because if I do, they have to be reassayed, and they're a pain to try and ship, because they're a lot of them weigh more than the 70-pound limit and all this sort of thing. So it might be that some of your listeners really want to store, they want a storage account. So let me give you a couple of options. The most low key and private one I know of is called Southern Storage in Shreveport. When I say low key and private, I mean very low key and very private. do you know Larry Laborde or not? I don't know if you've
heard. You've talked about him.
He's an old friend. He's in the silver business himself and several other things. But anyway, they can call him at 318-470-7291. Or they can email him at llaborde@gmail.com. And then there are commercial facilities, and all of these, the two in the United States that I'm going to mention, or two of the ones in the United States I'm going to mention, are also COMEX approved warehouses. What that means is we can buy 1,000-ounce bars, store them in that facility, and they never leave a COMEX approved warehouse, so we can sell them at full price whenever we want to. The first of those is CNT Depository. That's like Charlie Nasty Tom, or Nancy Tom. In Bridgewater, Massachusetts, they're at 508-807-4800. I have personally toured that facility with my wife, my daughter, and daughter-in-law, my son, and I have to tell you, they could just about take a direct hit from a meteor. I'm certain it would withstand a hit by a 747 jumbo jet. Incredibly well thought out facility, spent $20 million building it. As far as security is concerned, I'd have no doubt it's safe. The other one is IDS, I like investors, D like diversified, S like depository, S like services, in Newcastle, Delaware. Their number is 302-322-6150. And they have a website, ids-delaware.com. And I have complete confidence in them, too, as depositories go. You know.
Right.
There's one in Canada. IDS also has a depository in Canada, in Mississauga, Ontario. And that's idsofcanada.com. There's a toll-free number, 855-362-2431. And I would, you know, I've talked to all these people at length, and I'm confident that they're all professional. They know their stuff. There's one now other.
Well, we did a show last year with one of the Australian dealers who does storage. And of course, there's Perthmint down in Australia, but I've had very good luck with the Swiss banks who, if you can make the minimum, still do have relationships with the federal government. But of course, you know, it's not subject to the same privacy rules that it once was. But, you know, if you do want to keep money in another jurisdiction, I have a lot of confidence. You just have to be able to make much higher minimums now that the Treasury is worked over the Swiss. And, of course, I've mentioned to you DasSafe in Vienna. I don't know if you had a chance to look at that website. And, of course, I know last year you and I both removed our standing recommendation of gold money. And I continue to have to tell people that I don't recommend gold money nor Bitcoin other than for the amount of money they're willing to lose. You know, to me, it's no different than doing GLD, except you don't have a big bank. So I did want to mention that because that keeps coming up.
Well, the Swiss banks are problematic to me now because they've been under attack by the U.S. so long, and a lot of them don't want U.S. customers, are not enthusiastic about U.S. customers. And as you say, they're going to have big minimums if they do. There is an alternative of sorts in New Orleans called Security Center. It's in the old Federal Reserve building, and that's securitycenter.com. Phone number is 504-522-1254. What they offer is safe deposit boxes for rental. It's not insured. You have to have your own insurance. And they do offer a service where they will go into your box, take something out of your box, or receive something and put it into your box. Not at all the same thing as being able to call a bank where you're having a gold or silver hold account, you know, trade in it. But in any event, that's Security Center in New Orleans. And it's in the old Federal Reserve building, so it must be safe.
Unlike you, you want to have your bullets at home, not in Nashville. But yeah. I will say this: the most money that my clients have lost on precious metals is having precious metals stolen, or you know, forgetting where they put it. And so, before you bring it home, you need to be really careful about making sure you have a plan for where you keep it, how you keep it. Which is number one, safe and won't put you at risk physically or put you at risk in losing it. You know, when the plumber goes down into the basement and discovers it while he's doing what he's doing.
Well, yeah, you know, people are amazingly, amazingly blithe about it. If you're gonna keep silver or gold around your house somewhere, you have to make an effort to make it invisible. And, you know, you have to put it in a place where most people will not look for it. You know, what I look for is a place where they're going to look at it and never see it. In other words, my classic example is when you're standing at your kitchen sink, in front of the sink, there's an inset there where your toes fit. And that thing that your toes are looking at is called a kick plate. And if you pry that kick plate off, there's enough room to put a ton of stuff there. Well, nobody thinks about doing that. You know, most people break into your house are going to be there for 12 minutes and gone. So.
Well, Franklin, this has been very, very helpful. Before we close, is there anything you want to add or summarize about what to look for over the next month?
Yeah, I think it's normal and ordinary for markets to make big straight up moves and then pull back, and even to pull back sharply. And so I think what the biggest riddle that faces us, the biggest challenge that faces us in the next, say, 2 or 3 weeks, next month, is don't get sucked in and think that a counter trend rally in stocks is going to go on forever or that a correction in gold and silver is going to go on forever. Don't draw the conclusion, well, this is just another run up like January of last year, and it's going to play out, because I don't think that's the case. I think there's an up wave going on in stocks that could carry, you know, to 1,700 on the Dow, say, or 2,000 on the S&P. But after that, we're going to resume the trends. And so I think that's the main thing, is just to keep your head and obviously for this year, safety is going to be the rule you have to follow. Security, not risk taking, but safety and security.
See, you and I are a little bit different. I think if we're lucky, the world moves away from a debt model towards an equity model. And so what that means is, you know, it's hard to talk about because it's all stocks are not equal. But I think money's going to have to flow to assets and operations that can be productive. So we've been in a bubble economy, and the bubble is either over or flatlined. And now the question is, how are we going to get real productivity? And,
excuse me, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, you're talking about the most fundamental issue of human freedom that
right.
faces the world today, and it has been facing the world since the invention of socialism. And we've been, and that's the reason rich people are all socialists, because, you know, they tap into the stream up high, you know, where the stream is still free flowing and pure. But this is the fundamental, most fundamental question of human liberty. Does my labor belong to me? And can I use my labor and my property to make a living, or is the government going to steal it from me or make it impossible for me to do?
Right, but if you go throughout the economy, there are people who are unbelievably productive. And people who are just, paid a huge amount of money doing great destruction. There are companies that are unbelievably productive, and others that are just, you just wish they'd fail today and save us all the pain. They're running gobs of government subsidies and God knows what else. You know, so whether it's people or companies or assets, there's a reset that I would love to see happen, and it's more complicated than just, this, because when I look at the stock market, I see, terrible mess, and I see great companies, and, they're sitting there trading side by side, and the problem is not that the stock market will go up or down. What we need is for some to go up and some to go down. You know, we need a reset at a much more granular level.
And some to go away.
Absolutely.
Some to go away.
Starting with the F in FANG.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway,
absolutely.
Yeah. The invasion of privacy companies. Anyway,
right.
So that's the thing that makes it a little bit complicated. And so the question is, how do we get that reset of productivity across the board? Because that's what's going to happen. And if it doesn't, we're going to totalitarianism. So, anyway, but I know you and I will be the last two people to, I'm going to starve before I take government money other than what's owed back to me. So, anyway. Okay, well, Franklin, it's always a delight. I look forward to one of us cooking breakfast the day after the collapse. I just have to mention this. Did you see Ben Carson? A client forced me to go read the transcript of the Republican debate, and I got one of the greatest laughs I've ever had, because Ben Carson at one point got really frustrated. He said, look, the U.S. economy is on the verge of collapse. And to see a government, to see a presidential candidate burst that out in a debate, I said, this this divorce between the official reality and the reality is, you know, it's cracking everywhere you turn, and that's really positive. So you never know.
Well, that is good. You know, I mean, that's something that you couldn't imagine to have heard 5 years ago.
Yeah, and they didn't have time to bleep it. Anyway.
All right. Anyway. Well, listen, it's always fun. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You have a wonderful day. Bye.
Thank you. God bless you. Bye-bye.